Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Walk Review. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about rock and roll music from such sources as the News and Observer, The Week magazine, The Independent, NewYorkTimes.com, ClassicRockAboutAbout.com, RollingStone.com, BGORecords.com, ClassicBands.com, and Entertainment Weekly.
The dark of the day and the hiss of the summer night.
This opening is brought to us by a group called She and Him. Title of the song is Don't Look Back. We'll be hearing more about and from She and Him later on in today's program. But first, these trivia questions. Our trivia questions come to us once again from ClassicRock.com, Classic Rock's Fascinating Facts. Both of these questions today are multiple choice. Question number one. Before joining KISS in 1982, Vinnie Vincent was a staff songwriter for which of the following TV programs? Was it A, Pee-wee's Playhouse, B, Sesame Street, C, Bonanza, D, Happy Days, or E, none of the above? Question number two. In 1982, Hound Dog was named the most played record of all time on American jukeboxes. How many takes did it require Elvis Presley to get the final recorded version of that song? Was it A, 1, B, between 5 and 10, C, between 30 and 50, or D, over 100 takes? The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given at the end of today's program. But first, these transitions. The transition section of today's program is brought to us once again by BGORecords.com, today in rock history. And today is April 24 and April 25th. What were the number one hits this weekend? Well, back in 1953, Frankie Lane, I Believe. Back in 1959, on this weekend, the number one hit was Buddy Holly, It Doesn't Matter Anymore. Back in 1960, Elvis Presley had the number one hit this weekend with Stuck on You. 61, a year later, Del Shannon with Runaway. Back in 68, this weekend, it was Louis Armstrong with What a Wonderful World as the number one hit. Back in 1970, it was the Jackson 5. ABC was the number one hit. Back on April 24 and 25. In 76, it was Led Zeppelin's Presence. Back in 82, it was Paul McCartney and Stevie Wonder, Ebony and Ivory was the number one hit. Back on April 24 and 25. In 87, it was Madonna's La Isla Bonita. And back in 1993, it was R.E.M.'s Automatic for the People as the number one hit. Back on April 24 and 25. If you were born on April 24, happy B-Day, and you share a birthday with Barbara Streisand. She was born on that day back in 1942. And Doug Clifford from Creedence Clearwater Revival was born on that day also, back in 1945. And if you were born on April 25th, happy birthday to you too, and you share a birthday with Ella Fitzgerald, the jazz singer from 1918. And also Stu Cook from Creedence Clearwater Revival. Stu Cook was born on April 25, 1945. Deaths on April 25 include Pamela Morrison. She was the wife of Jim Morrison of the Doors back in 1974. Miscellany and rock history on these days. Well, back in 1956, it was Elvis Presley reaching the top of the U.S. chart with Heartbreak Hotel, and that was his first number one. A year later, 1957, Ricky Nelson's first single, A Teenager's Romance, sells 60,000 copies in 3 days. Back in 1958, a year after that, Chuck Berry's Sweet Little 16 hits the charts. Year after that, 1959, Your Hit Parade, the Saturday night pop music show that's been running since April 1935, has its last U.S. radio broadcast. And back in 1961, this weekend, it was Bob Dylan making his recording debut playing harmonica on the title track of Harry Belafonte's LP, Midnight Special. Bob Dylan is paid $50 for his work. Back in 1977, Elvis Presley records three tracks live, subsequently released on the Moody Blue LP, at Michigan Civic Center, his last recordings. And finally, back in 1990, while constructing the set for the Wall concert in Potsdamer Platz, Germany, Roger Waters' road crew discovers an unexploded World War II bomb. You may also remember back in 1993, this weekend, it was Farm Aid 6 with Willie Nelson, John Cougar Mellencamp, and Neil Young, among a 40 artists who played in front of 40,000 people at the concert in Ames, Iowa. This next article is published by Dave White from About.com Guide. New release calendar, April 2010. Peter Wolf, Jeff Beck, and Peter Frampton top the list of new releases from Classic Rockers in April 2010. Number 1, Peter Wolf, Midnight Souvenirs. Release date is April 6, 2010. Peter Wolf, J. Geils Band, is releasing his 7th solo album 8 years after his 6th. His latest, Souvenirs, is something of a sequel to 2002's Sleepless, being thematically similar in its advice for the lovelorn. Musically, it's a fusion of rock, country, folk, R&B, and blues, and features vocal collaborations with Nico Case, Shelby Lynn, and Merrill Haggard. Number 2, The Doors, When You're Strange soundtrack, release date April 6, 2010. The album features 13 studio and live recordings of The Doors, narration and poetry read by Johnny Depp, and an interview with Jim Morrison, all from the new theatrical release, When You're Strange. The film has a limited theatrical release on April 9 and will be shown on PBS in May. Number 3, Jeff Beck, Emotion and Commotion, release date April 13, 2010. It seems that Jeff Beck alternates between quietly flying below the radar and prominently reminding us of his guitar genius. 7 years after his last solo album, Jeff, he's back on the radar with a world tour, first with his former Yardbirds bandmate Eric Clapton, then on his own for the spring and summer, and a new album, Emotion and Commotion. The eclectic mix of sounds and styles includes the backing of a 64-piece orchestra and vocals by Joss Stone, Imelda May, and Olivia Safe. This will be Beck's 17th solo studio album. Number 4, Uriah Heep, Celebration Special Edition CD-DVD, release date April 13, 2010. Number 5, Final 24 DVD series, Janis Joplin, Keith Moon, release date April 20, 2010. Final 24, a biography channel series about celebrity deaths, is being released throughout 2010. Beginning April 20 with drama documentaries on the deaths of vocalist Janis Joplin and The Who's original drummer Keith Moon. The series combines events during each artist's last 24 hours with significant events from their careers and personal lives, resulting in what are billed as psychological detective stories attempting to uncover the mystery of why the celebrity died. Coming later this year are shows on The Doors' Jim Morrison, October 19th, and Sid Vicious of the Sex Pistols on the 29th of June. Number 6, Moby Grape Live, release date April 20, 2010. Several marketing blunders in the fact that they didn't promote a single frontman unfortunately doom Moby Grape to regional success around San Francisco and cult status elsewhere. Moby Grape Live is the first official non-bootleg release of live performances, including sets at Avalon Ballroom, Monterey Pop Festival, and various soundboard and radio broadcast tapes. The release showcases one of the best psychedelic rock bands at the peak of the psych rock moment. And finally, number 7, Peter Frampton, Thank You, Mr. Churchill. The release date is April 27, 2010. Chronologically and musically, Peter Frampton is a lifetime removed from the teenager who fronted The Herd and Humble Pie back in the 1960s. Frampton's 14th studio album is titled Thank You, Mr. Churchill, because, he says, this album is very autobiographical. It starts with my birth, which I thank Mr. Churchill for bringing my father back from the Second World War. Frampton wrote or co-wrote all of the material on the album and recorded it in his home studio. Once again, these are releases coming out this April. Local rock news, we see this article by David Menconi in the News and Observer on March 28, 2010. Carolina chocolate drops spark buzz. Austin, Texas. There were plenty of notable acts conjuring up buzz at the most recent South by Southwest Music Industry Convention, but one of the most talked about groups was a young acoustic trio with a repertoire of old-time songs spanning multiple centuries, Durham's Carolina Chocolate Drops. The late 20s, early 30s trio of Dom Flemons, Rhiannon Giddens, and Justin Robinson won raves at all half-dozen shows they played, including one on the back porch of a swank hotel for a small crowd of industry types. Their label president introduced them as Where the Past and Future Collide, and the group more than lived up to that. Wielding guitar, banjo, fiddle, jug, castanets, and even kazoo, the Chocolate Drops played mostly songs dating from long, long ago, tunes associated with largely forgotten acts, such as the Carolina Sunshine Trio and Papa Charlie Jackson. But the best moment was the set closer. Hit 'em Up Style, a 2001 hit for Blue Cantrell. A revenge fantasy about infidelity, Hit 'em Up Style proposes a shopping spree on the cheater's credit card as the ultimate in retail therapy. Robinson's kept time by human beatbox and Giddens was on her feet and testifying by the end. So you better let him know that if you mess up, you gotta hit him up. Inspiring toe taps, head nods, and whoops all around. After the set, the Chocolate Drops retired to the hotel cafe to talk a bit before heading off for their next performance. Old-time string band music is generally not considered a hot commercial property, and yet the three are making it work. Improbably, their major label debut, Genuine Negro Jig, Nonesuch Records, made it to number 150 on the Billboard 200 album chart, alongside the Michael Bublés and Toby Keiths of the world. 5 years ago, this would not have happened, Robinson said. There's been a lot going on that contributes to our current success, like a general awareness and resurgence of acoustic music in general. And the music industry's been completely shaken up. There's more room for someone like us right now. The Chocolate Drops' success resembles that of Chapel Hill band Squirrel Nut Zippers, who also recreated old styles of music through a contemporary prism. It took an unexpected MTV hit for the song Hell to drive the Zippers to million-selling status, which is not likely to happen for the Chocolate Drops. Still, stranger things have happened. Nonesuch, which is home to Laurie Anderson, David Byrne, and other alternative-leaning acts, is the perfect label for making an offbeat act unexpectedly far. The group has already cracked some high-profile venues, including a Prairie Home Companion, the Grand Ole Opry, in a star turn in Denzel Washington's 2007 film, The Great Debaters. This next article is also by David Menconi, newsobserver.com, printed on 7th of March, 2010. Tickets gone before they're even on sale. On a Friday morning in January, Brent Thompson logged on to Ticketmaster.com at 9:55. Tickets for the band Wilco's March 27 show at the Durham Performing Arts Center were going on sale at the top of the hour, and he wanted to make sure he didn't miss out. Right at 10 a.m., I hit the find tickets button, says Thompson, who manages a restaurant in Raleigh. Two at any price, any section, I did that repeatedly for a half hour, came up empty. So I called the box office, but the young lady told me they were sold out. Indeed, they were. Wilco's show sold out in 17 minutes, a record for the 2,700-seat D-Pack. But that doesn't mean no tickets were available. That same day, Thompson went to TicketsNow.com, a secondary ticket-selling site owned by the ticket vending giant Ticketmaster, which sells tickets for D-Pack events, and found plenty of people selling Wilco tickets at jacked-up prices. Nearly 2 months after that 17-minute sellout, hundreds of Wilco tickets are still listed on TicketsNow.com, eBay-owned StubHub, TicketExchangeUSA.com, and other sites for many multiples more than the $35 face price. Some of the people selling tickets through these secondary vendors are average citizens, lucky enough to score extra tickets and looking to turn a buck. But others are professional brokers who find ways to buy low and sell high, such as the four men indicted in New Jersey last week and charged with hacking into Ticketmaster's website to buy up blocks of tickets to scalp. Buying concert tickets used to be straightforward, but it's become a complicated process in which the public on sale date and the original ticket price means almost nothing. In the case of Wilco's D-Pack show, most of the tickets were gone before the official on sale date. Out of 2,700 seats, only about 1,000 went on sale to the general public on January 8, according to the show promoter, Frank Heath. Article skips down. The proportions can even more lopsided for truly hot megatours, such as country pop star Taylor Swift, who played Raleigh's RBC Center on May the 1st. Officials for the RBC Center and tour promoter Live Nation declined to provide figures for Swift's Raleigh show, which sold out in less than an hour when tickets went on sale in October. But when Swift played in Nashville last year, only 1,591 of the arena's 13,330 tickets went on sale to the public, according to a report on Nashville CBS-affiliated television station. The other 11,739 tickets were held or sold through various pre-sales, including tour sponsor American Express and the fan clubs of Swift and opening act Kelly Pickler. Who's to blame? Pinning down who deserves the blame for so many consumers being at the mercy of resellers isn't easy, because secondary sellers are frequently anonymous enough that it's hard to tell who they are or where they got their tickets. The entity that tends to catch the most heat is Ticketmaster, which recently merged with Live Nation, the concert promotion giant that operates Raleigh's Time Warner Cable Music Pavilion at Walnut Creek and hundreds of other venues nationwide. Seeing a bunch of high-priced tickets on TicketsNow.com, the official reselling place of Ticketmaster, doesn't feel right, Thompson says. It just seems dirty. Once upon a time, selling a $35 ticket for hundreds of dollars would have been illegal in North Carolina. The state's anti-scalping law prohibited selling any ticket for more than $3 over the original price. But during the 2007-08 season, the legislature amended the law to allow internet resale of tickets at inflated prices. Mirroring similar laws in other states, the amended scalping law allows higher-priced online ticket sales in exchange for consumer protections, such as requiring online secondary vendors to issue refunds if an event is canceled. So now the main law applying to online ticket sales is the transparent one of supply and demand. All you have to do is log on to a ticket broker site to see what the market will bear. Wilco's D-Pack tickets have been selling for an average price of $96 on StubHub, ranging from $61 to $250. And the average StubHub price for Swift's RBC tickets, which have face prices ranging from $25 to $59.50, is $153, with a top selling price of $530. Where you don't see transparency, however, is where those tickets came from. Article skips down. The people who make most of the money on scalp tickets are the sellers, who pay a percentage of the sale price to the broker sites that list their tickets. But sometimes the sellers on secondary sites are the artists themselves, especially when it's the expensive front row seats and the tickets are part of high-priced VIP packages. the open secret. That's the not-so-hidden secret of concert industry, says Steve Knopper, a reporter who covers the concert business for Rolling Stone magazine. You'll see the best 50, 100, or 200 Britney Spears seats up for auction on Ticket Exchange, Ticketmaster's exchange site for huge prices. No one wants to look greedy, so a lot of that is completely underground, but it happens all the time. Ticket Exchange, USA.com, recently listed four Fearless VIP tickets for Swift's Raleigh show for $1,120 each, a price that includes limo service, floor seats, and pre-show dinner and drinks. Officials with Ticket Techs, ChangeUSA.com, Live Nation, and Ticketmaster all declined to comment on the source of those tickets. So what do you know about this featured artist for today's program, She and Him? When I first heard them, it reminded me of Carole King meeting the Dixie Chicks. Well, we'll see 60s pop with a steel guitar. Let's take a look at these reviews of She and Him. The first review is by Jody Rosen, published on March 23, 2010. And it's printed in RollingStone.com. She and Him Album Review, Volume 2. California is a great big nation, sings Zooey Deschanel on her second collaboration with singer-songwriter M. Ward. The duo's impeccably assembled retro pop is unmistakably regional, with puckish hooks and reverb-heavy production that recall California dreamers like the Mamas and the Papas. The songs are all wistful, even tales of stupefying boredom, like I'm Gonna Make It Better, is the sunniest sad record you'll hear all year. Pretty love songs set in a nation where summer never ends. In this review of Volume 1, She and Him, by Rob Sheffield from March 20th, 2008, RollingStone.com. She is Zooey Deschanel, indie boy's movie star crush of choice. Him is M. Ward, the rootsy guitarist. Together they pose as a great lost 70s AM gold couple. Their acoustic vibe conjures up a time travel fantasy of key parties, hot tubs, and Chablis-crazed groping behind the spider plants. If this is your kind of thing, you will love this record, because Deschanel and Ward definitely know their mellow. In every song, they sound like they wish they were cruising in their Le Car, hitting the beach at Martha's Vineyard with James and Carly to pound strawberry daiquiris and sing Mockingbird. Whoops, don't want to be late for that Mo Udall rally. Deschanel's vocals are so Carly Simon it hurts, especially on country-flavored tunes like Got Me and Take It Back. Lazy souls will compare her to Dusty Springfield, but the more accurate touchstone is soft rock goddess Rita Coolidge. Deschanel's voice also has sweet country curves that evoke Lynn Anderson, Jennifer Warnes, and Linda Ronstadt. Change is Hard is a loving homage to Ronstadt's different drum. Ward even plays the harpsichord solo on steel guitar. Deschanel's songs are simple, which is a smart move. What a drag if she were trying to sing serious torch songs. But She and Him don't fare so well with covers. Smokey Robinson is over their heads, judging from the flubbed chords and notes in You Really Got a Hold on Me. And they do the Beatles, I Should Have Known Better, as Giggly Camp. It's more fun to hear them do their own laid-back thing on This Is Not a Test, with its EST lyrics and L.A. malaise. Deschanel doesn't go for the sassy comic edge she brings to her movies. In these songs, she's just a girl standing in front of a boy, asking him to love her. And if Ward could resist, he must have a heart of stone, or maybe just a switchblade-packing girlfriend. So let's take a listen to some snippets from She and Him. We'll start off with Why Do You Let Me Stay?
Why do you let me stay here? Come and play here. I'm just
now we'll listen to I Was Made For You. Carole King kind of lyrics, sung by the Dixie Chicks. And now we'll take a listen to I Should Have Known Better. This is the cover of the Beatles song, and done with a guitar country sound. Close out today's program with She and Him with their song, I Thought I Saw Your Face Today. But first, this article. This article was published in Entertainment Weekly, April the 2nd, 2010. Ads That Rock by Leon Greenblatt. Seems like every week there's a new TV ad with some cool song we've never heard before. Here's a look at the music and a couple of recent spots. Viewers with itchy TiVo trigger fingers, beware. You may be missing some excellent new music in between your favorite shows. In recent months, indie favorites like Phoenix, Cadillac, Grizzly Bear, Volkswagen, and The Temper Trap, Diet Cola, Chrysler, Rhapsody, have popped up in ads, and now a new crop of lesser-known acts are finding a national stage via TV spots. Read on for our take on two of the most notable new commercial tunes. Target's Modern Music's Untitled. The airy Britpop-ish ditty for the chain's colorful Liberty of London line was created expressly for the spot by a Minneapolis-based production company, also behind memorable tracks for Budweiser and State Farm. And Leah Greenblatt gives us a B+. Where to find the song? Nowhere yet, unfortunately. Although they're working on a full-length version, which they're hoping to release, pending Target's permission. The answer to today's trivia questions, Vinnie Vincent, before joining Kiss in 1982, was a songwriter for Answer D, Happy Days. And Elvis Presley had actually 31 takes to get the final version of the sound Hound Dog that we hear today. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Rock Review. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Goodbye.